Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is where Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi bring you the latest news and information on pro wrestling and MMA, as well as interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap with your hosts, Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking, finally, The Rock has come back to WrestleMania. The most electrifying man in all of entertainment, hosting the most electrifying event in all of entertainment. Follow The Rock online as we go down the road to WrestleMania. If you smell what The Rock is.
All right, welcome to Ringside Wrap. And obviously, I had planned on the big story coming in this week, guys, to be I guess the beatdown on Strikeforce and the tease of the retirement. But my God, Monday, I guess all that changed, huh?
I think it did.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You know, if you guys don't mind, I want to elaborate on Dwayne Johnson too. But before that, a couple positive things: the little girl from Modern Family was so comfortable never being in a wrestling ring. I'm thinking some of the wrestlers should have paid attention to her. I mean, seriously, she was good, you know, never having been in that situation. She did a very, very good job, I thought. Hornswoggle is a pedophile, though I'm not really sure that. Again, no consistency. He's a child one minute, he's an adult, and you know. But if he's a child now, he's a child with a damn glued-on beard. there was some good wrestling on Raw Monday night. But my hat is off to Eve and Natalya. Now, you talk about TNA girls all you want, but there was wrestling Monday night between Eve and Natalya. When I saw Eve take the bottom wrist lock in the takedown for the cover, I thought, okay, Finley, Regal, Arn, Malink, somebody is doing a job. Those girls wrestled. Nice switches, nice takedowns, nice on the one pinning combination. I forget exactly how it started, but, Eve got her shoulder up. Natalya did a nice spin over to cover shoulder to shoulder. It was a damn good match. What ruined it is, here we go again, overbooking a Lumber Jill, which for one stupid dive out of the ring onto a bunch of girls, they didn't need that. Those girls could have carried that match very admirably by themselves. And my friends, it was wrestling. It wasn't bullshit. It was wrestling. But in a matter of 15 minutes, in the last year, two people have stepped out onto that runway and made their way to that ring and have smoked everybody else, and that would be Steve Austin and Dwayne Johnson. And if in 15 minutes Rock didn't show you the inadequacies of everybody else in that roster, I'm not really sure what the hell went on. And I said last week there was nothing that made, you know, that made WrestleMania memorable, but now there is, and he's gonna add buys. But you know, here's the thing: he didn't come out on the ramp and shake his ass, grab his crotch, throw his legs in the air, do any anything crazy. It was if you are an independent wrestler listening to this, it was timing, pacing, facials, and body language. That's all it is. It's not all the crap. He didn't have any hand signals. He was just magnificent. I mean, honest to God.
And, And what was amazing about it, and what was amazing about it to me was seamless. It was almost like he'd never left. I mean, he just literally just rolled out there like he'd just done a promo last week, and he was trying to top it this week.
He and Austin both. It's a natural thing. And again, I'm going to ask the question, how many of these kids may have something similar if they were allowed to find out? You know, but yes, he is the electrifying man. And when he did the peekaboo, what was it he said? Cena looked like he'd come out of Barney's ass.
when
he said anus. They bleeped him a couple times, and they thought the hell with it. You know, but
yeah, it was absolutely great stuff. Mike, what were your thoughts on it? Because we were talking right before we went on air, and we kind of got cut off. But what were your thoughts on it?
Well, it was certainly the people in Anaheim got their money's worth out of that ticket, didn't they? Back to Eve for a second. You know, she goes out with a Gracie, and you know, not only she got all these things that WWE looks for. Obviously, she's a beautiful girl. You know, loves doing the charity events and everything, athletic, all of that sort of stuff. And on top of it, you know, there is an actual, like, you know, want to, you know, have some succeeding in actually wrestling, and obviously going out with a Gracie, you just tend to learn things by osmosis anyway, I would believe, after a while. But as far as the Rock, obviously it's the Rock, and I loved it, and I absolutely loved it. Now, with that said, he is going to leave again. And when he leaves again, it's what position will John Cena be in after it? Because I assume this will obviously lead up to something with John Cena and The Rock together against someone, or some sort of, you know, something happening in WrestleMania where obviously, not a torch passing, but there's going to be affirmation from The Rock to John Cena. You know, that's, if you're, it's going to be, I just want to see how that they treat all of this too, because obviously they're, you know, John Cena is going to be looking as though he is the heel in all of this. I mean, you know, it's very quick for people in those Barney shout out colored shirts to start chanting Cena sucks when The Rock went out there. So I'm intrigued where that story is going to go. And I guess breadcrumbs were left when John Cena was out there saying things about The Rock. When he was on red carpets, it was good breadcrumb laying. I forget who said that, but it didn't, you know, it does make sense now under the circumstances, and it's a great move for WWE. Obviously, they need something for this show. You have someone in The Rock that obviously everyone loves to see when he's out there, so you have him interplaced throughout the show, and it's the best case scenario this year for WrestleMania. You know, they didn't, you know, and I don't know who would have done it anyway. I think their options would have been limited to reach out to have that, you know, to try to get a Trump-esque level of interest, or Floyd Mayweather or somebody like that from the outside. This was the best case scenario, absolutely all around. It's going to be interesting to see how they end up treating John Cena with all of this.
Well, whole thing, like, there's Rock and then there's everybody else. You know, it's like Larry Bird, the first year of the 3-point contest at the All-Star game, to the locker room and saying, "Who in here is playing for second place?" Because obviously, I'm number one, right? I mean, yep. And it's, you know, it made everyone else look inadequate. I mean,
and
in terms of,
that's a terrifying thing though, too. Because I mean, Jerry Lawler, and I love Jerry Lawler, but at 61 years old, when we were like, you know, after you praise it and you go, "Man, what a great job he's doing," you stop for a second and think, "Jesus Christ. Jerry Lawler at 61 is upstaging this entire roster," and then The Rock comes out and that happens, and it's like,
yeah,
man,
kind of
wake-up calls again are needed, and unfortunately they won't happen.
Well, it's kind of a sad commentary on the state of things when Lawler and Rock are the two most energizing factors on any WWE programming for the last, at least, you know, God.
Well, the point, you know, they have been allowed to freestyle. To be themselves times 10 or what, you know, whatever. And these everybody else has been micromanaged to friggin' death. You know, while you mentioned Lawler, you know, we should say our sympathies go out to Jerry, the passing of his mother. But here's a detail that I think, in lieu of that, it shouldn't have been Michael Cole that sent said that he'd talk to Jerry. because they're supposed to be at odds. I mean, they should have kept that persona. Maybe it's a small thing, but damn it, I keep believing the small things are more important than the big things, and they always have been. It should have been, somebody else that made mention of that, I wouldn't have expected Cole to say something negative or disgusting, or just said nothing. Would have been, I think, the best thing that could have happened. But, again, it's a wake-up call for everybody I've talked to that actually understands the business a little bit. I was talking to John Moxley earlier today, who wrestles for Dragon Gate and Evolve, and I've had a little involvement with John in terms of his training. He was saying he said, man, it was just the coolest thing in the world. Everybody's turned on by it. And the people who run that company, who make decisions should see, Jesus Christ. You're right. When he shuts up, what have we got? Everybody else seems to be pretty amateurish in comparison. And what's it going to be in terms of value? What is it in terms of buys for WrestleMania? I don't know. But I think it's going to be substantial. Again, it's going to make it where it was like, last week, if I see it, okay. And if I don't, I don't really see it, but I'm missing anything. And here's a guy who's not even going to wrestle, but yet will make people buy that damn thing just to see what it is he is going to do. The difference between, having it, the charisma, to grab those people in the palm of your hand. And again, I go back, whatever it was, I don't know exactly a year ago, but Austin, in the same manner. And if I owned the company, if I was a general manager, if I was whoever, in creative, I thought, okay, two guys who don't take bumps anymore have done more for this company in a matter of 10 minutes than the guys who are taking bumps. What have you got?
Agreed.
And I'm not going to fall over shocked, obviously, with Tough Enough coming, and they've announced that that's going to be on airing both before and after Raw, thank God. It was, looked at to be before Raw. They're going to run a replay afterwards, as well as right before their late night, 1 in the morning, early, late Saturday night, early Sunday morning show, AM Raw. They'll be running it again, and Steve Austin's going to be the host of that, which, is another... He could pop up at WrestleMania around that time, too, which, again, then you got two guys where it will make the show more entertaining, well worth buying. But with that said, after they're gone, come on, guys. This WrestleMania, they're post-WrestleMania time. So, the fourth quarter reports come out that the stock drops down, even though it ended up being a little bit better than what they thought it would be. And it goes down to about 12. The stock's going to be up to about 14 again around WrestleMania because they always do that. And then afterwards becomes this malaise where it just drives you nuts. And it's like, come on, capitalize and follow up on this. And I hope they're actually able to do it this year.
Well, here's the thing, too. I think, I was talking to somebody today about, I said, Steve is whatever age, he's in his 50s. Isn't he 50, early 50s by now? Rock is what, 40? Maybe. Anyway, my point is both of these guys, between their ears, have so much talent that if you lace the boots up on both of them and put them in tights and put them out there, they would steal the show without taking six bumps between them. I mean, again, if you're an independent wrestler paying attention, that's the whole story anyway. It's about timing and not how much you do, but when you do it and knowing what to do at a certain time and feeling the crowd that's around you. And there's guys in there that can outbump them 10-1 and do goofier bumps than either one of them could have ever done. And yet both of those guys are certified money in the bank performers. And hey, that's the difference between, being legendary, I guess, or iconish or whatever, and just being one of the boys.
Throw Jericho in there for a three-way on that. you know, of guys who, you know, could possibly, you know, appear, although I don't think he will. But throw him in the mix, because reading his book, too, it's just exactly because his new book came out, so I ended up, I had to pick it up because the first one was great. And there's been a lot of talk about this book and about some of his failings when he went up to WWE and some of the people he talked to and things that he had to realize. And it's, you know, a lot of exactly what you just said, obviously tempered to his situation there, but exactly what you just said. Throw him in that mix. There's another guy who, you know, has ended up being to the point where less ended up being a lot more.
Yeah, well, you know, and with between those two guys, Chris is obviously technically a better in-ring performer than Dwayne would be. I would a different style than Steve, but by no means a better in-ring performer. But would fall in third in terms of mic skills behind him. But still, that's not an insult either. You know, that's like saying you lost the best. Best of seven series to the Lakers last year. It's okay.
Willie Mays on
that
the home
doesn't
run
exactly
list.
Make you chop liver, you know. Did either one of you guys see the TNA pay-per-view?
No.
I've seen bits and pieces. I'm going to watch it before because I know I'm going to have to see it before Observer Live on Sunday. I caught little bumps and clicks of it, and you know, okay.
Yeah. Well, you know I think there is something about is something. Obviously, Jarrett and Angle had the best match on the show. My point being is that they could have still had the best match without all the, you know, the stupid stipulations. Someone had said to me, "Well, you know, after this is such an important thing, you know, that your wife's kids are on the line, et cetera, but they went out there and they locked up and they wrestled." I said, well, you know, here's part of the deal. You make, again, no knock on Mike Tenay or on Taz, because somebody should have touched on this with them probably in the, you know, production meeting. But if this is the way, you know, okay, so what do you do with that? Do they say, well, these guys should be beating the hell out of each other? No. The story here is, you know, so much is on the line here tonight. Both of these men are being cautious because one stumble and it's all over. There, one has, you know, something very, very, very real to his wife at stake, and the other one has his, you know, his pride. It's probably the biggest thing about his pride ever, short of the Olympics. So they're both being cautious. But the the point there is the announcers should have taken you in that direction. Here's what we're seeing. We weren't, you know, I mean, maybe nobody even mentioned to the announcers how this match is going to start or how it's going to play out. But then they should, you know, somebody should have picked up on that and put that into your mind. And so you were more comfortable with it in that respect.
Absolutely, and that this you know, I don't mind wacky things and wacky storylines, and that's what this is. I mean, the Kurt Angle, well, the Kurt Angle's just the angry faces he has made, and along with Karen just being, you know, the uber bitch, and really, you know, patronizing him on last Thursday's show, and Jeff Jarrett is very good at what he's doing too. It was just like there was only one way for this match to go. This just drove me nuts about it. It's, okay, let's say in theory, Kurt Angle gets custody of his kids back. Realistically, the only way to go with that angle is really dark and really creepy with just, I shiver at the possibilities of where that could go and what, you know, a kid could say or something like that or what their mentality would be with that storyline. So the only other thing that could happen would be leading to Kurt having to walk her down the aisle. It was just, of all the things, and I know that there is, obviously, this is the sports entertainment portion of the proceedings, and with Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett, because they are so good, and I do trust Jeff Jarrett a lot, I'm fine with it. But it just, why? I don't know. It just drove me nuts of just, what a stupid way to get to you know, the comedy of him walking her down the aisle. Just with that, I mean, of all the stipulations, like, why that one?
Right. Well, you know, talking about little things meaning a lot, one thing that I caught, okay, last Thursday night when Jeff said we're putting the kids on the line, she, you know, oh, but yeah, we shouldn't, you know, if she was beside herself with anxiety and doubt and questioning the whole thing. And, you know, these are my kids. I mean, I gave birth to these two children, and this, you know, I'm not sure this is the right thing to do. But then on Sunday, when he's doing the promo, she's standing behind him with a big smile and nodding her head yes.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Why are you, so you know the finish already, Karen? Is that the deal? But, I mean, you get my point. She should have been had as much more anxiety on Sunday night than she had on Thursday night. Because, we're just moments away or an hour away or 10 minutes away from this thing happening, and I may not have custody. I mean, but, when I hear myself say it, it's stupid. You had a good match without, well, it here again, and I'm not making a comparison between the performers, but it's like the Lumber Jill thing with Eve and Natalya. It was overbooked because with as good as those girls had a match, as good as they were in that match, they didn't need that crap. And Jarrett and Angle sure as hell didn't need that crap either. You know, I will say this though, with the Dudleys, Bubba did with the kid, you know, was it left everybody. I think, you know, it left an impression. It was heat. It was serious heat. Except for the idiots in the Impact Zone saying one more time. That's like, wait a minute. He's the heel, you idiots. Well, but we're cool. We're the cool people on the internet who we're smart. We read a book and got an autograph once. Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. You know, but
I don't even think it's that. I think it's just it's the programming. It's like Pavlov's dog reaction, and we're all guilty of this because we were with The Rock came out too, of just you react to the entrance video, now you react to the move in that way, and because I think it's a psychological thing. They're the TNA fans, and it's like ECW, and it just became a programming thing, which does screw things up, and it does make it look bad when, you know, when they do something they're not supposed to do. But the only people you can blame is, you know, that what's been created, and it's, you know.
Well, that's,
if you don't break it, you don't break it.
Yeah, you educate your people the way. Well, you know, that's the other thing too is when I hear somebody say people don't buy this, they buy what you sell. You know, if you're good at selling something, then they're buying it, and if you're not good at selling it, then they're obviously not going to buy it. And that's you're right. It's the business has created its own problems over recent years, and that's one of them.
And that's it. That was another match where it was just like, after watching on Thursday, it's like, how the hell do they exactly get themselves out of this if the babyface sons just put the heel through the table right before the pay-per-view match, where he's going to be in a handicap match against all three of you? So I was wondering how they were going to dig themselves out of that, which, you know, they did. And there's, you know, Bubba and Devon slamming into each other as an undercard thing. I really have no problem with that whatsoever, because Bubba Ray as Bully Ray, I think, is working out quite well.
What I'm wondering is, did they know on Sunday that Jeff Hardy's lawyer was going to be sick on Thursday? I mean, on Wednesday. Is that why they put the belt on him?
Within the realm of possibility. Although, see, Brian and I talked about this on Sunday. All the things I've said aside of I would not have signed him in the first place, and I would not have put the title on him in the first place, and, you know, all that, at this point, at TNA, I was fine with him putting the belt back on him, regardless of what was going to happen, even him pleading guilty. I don't think it even matters. I really don't think it even matters.
And in regard to what's a work, is NASCAR a work?
It's always been accused of workers' quality.
On the anniversary of Dale Sr.'s death, Dale Jr. happens to win the pole and hasn't won a race in my lifetime or somebody's lifetime, and all of a sudden he's on the pole at Daytona. Wow, I don't know. It seems pretty damn convenient, doesn't it?
That's, you know, I was there that
really
day 10 years ago too.
When was the last time Dale Earnhardt Jr. had a pole position? Tell me.
Oh, Jesus, I don't know, but if it wasn't Atlanta or Daytona, I'm not sure what it would have been.
Yeah, but he arose to the occasion on the anniversary of his father's passing.
Hey,
and
he went in NASCAR.
And I mean no disrespect to his father's, I mean, in any way, shape, or form, but, you know, I mean, this has been said on ESPN, and, you know, it's been talked about. It's just, you know, is this a publicity thing? And, you know, could it be? Sure. Well, he didn't win the race. He just got the pole.
Well, and that's the thing with NASCAR, too. NASCAR is at a time where they are trying to come up with anything. And, again, this is, you know, I'm not saying anything about this, but feeding into any conspiracy theory or anything like that. Real sports just ran a thing on Jimmy Johnson. You know, NASCAR is slumping like a lot of other sports right now. Their core fan base has been hit the hardest, and with the entertainment, you know, dollar being stretched in so many different directions and just the way that the sport had changed, they do have to do a lot to get back a lot of the people that they have and to get eyeballs back on them ratings-wise and people spending money on merchandise and the like. And, you know, Dale Jr., if you have a strong Dale Jr. with the merchandise, you know, that kind of helps everybody else a little bit too.
Yeah,
well, you mean it's like
back in 43 and let him go.
Yeah, you mean that's like the guy coming out of Barney's anus?
Sells
a lot of t-shirts. Hey, I'll tell you this. I bring that t-shirt to Rockhead, and they're going to sell the hell out of that.
Everything is so well done with him. It's not even funny.
Well, you know, and here again, maybe this is a small point, but it's something that caught my attention. First of all, if you're above the age of voting, or maybe even at the age of voting, you're going to walk around with some guy's picture on your T-shirt, right? But with just that saying and on a nice shirt, yeah, you know, a lot of people at any age might buy the shirt just because they're Rock fans. But, you know, I look at the Cena shirts, and not just John's necessarily, but a lot of the shirts they have, and they're colorful and they're well-designed and all that. But how many adults are going to wear those things, you know? I mean, I'm not going to wear a Rich Tate t-shirt.
It's been the problem with all wrestling merchandise, though. It's like, I don't know who is buying this stuff. I don't know. I just, for years, it always drove me nuts. That's when WWE started coming out with, like, golf shirts with just the Scratch logo. It was like, okay, I can actually see myself wearing that instead of the, I don't know, there's been some bad t-shirts.
Yeah. Well, I say they get, you know, too artistic and, you know, it's just, I don't know. But anyway, I just, what that shirt, and it's on their, somebody told me today, it's on their shop zone already, obviously. And I thought, yeah, that's a cool shirt. You know, I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to spend $25 or whatever it is for one. But somebody said, you want one of these? Yeah, man, that's cool. I'd wear it. Not a big deal.
Now, Rich, would you wear that?
No, but Les, would you wear a shirt with my picture on it?
No. I love you, Rich, but no.
just doing some testing here. Just trying to figure out, you know, the market. Can we buy this?
Well, are you gonna have an orange shirt with your purple face on it or something?
purple with orange.
All right, cool.
Now, see, I would wear a shirt. You know, now, see, if Les had a shirt, you put the picture of him from the 70s on there, with just saying old school on the front, just on the back, just less is more on the back, I'd wear that shirt.
Well, thank you, Mike. I'll have a 4,000 printed up tomorrow.
Well, if we're going to do that, we need to get the picture of him sitting there with Fred Ward down in Columbus with his face just totally, totally covered in blood. I can't remember what match that was after. But
that was Bobby Shane.
Awesome.
It wasn't,
yeah.
Columbus, it was Macon.
Macon.
That was Shane. That was Bobby.
Okay. God, what an awesome photo. So anyway, we never actually started the show the way we normally do. Want to mention here a half hour in that tonight we got Nigel Sherrod from Lucha Libre USA. And I believe they're about to start the second season, Mike?
Yes, sir. Yeah, they had the first season on MTV2 and going to start up the second one.
All right, he's going to join us.
Are you going to sing Rancho Grande as an entrance?
Yeah, we got a mariachi band coming in.
All right, cool. I want to say before we get too carried away here, and I don't have any details, so I'm not going to mention towns or anything right now, but it appears 99% sure that the second weekend in May, I'm going to be in your fair state there, Rich, doing a camp.
All right. We'll talk about that a little bit later. All right. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a 60-minute break here, and we'll be back with Nigel.
You're listening to the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia wrestling history? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today, and not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
All right, we're back, and as promised, we bring on our first guest for tonight, Nigel Sherrod. Nigel, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rich, thanks for having me. It's definitely a pleasure to be here on the Ringside Wrap.
All right. Obviously, working with Lucha Libre, want to talk a little bit about that. What can you tell us about the second season coming up?
Sure. Well, we've been filming, out at the Hard Rock Casino in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's kind of comparable, I guess, to the setup that TNA has, whereas we have our own little studio where we film at it. It holds roughly about 2,500 people, and ever since we've been taping since in 2010 in December, actually our first taping was there, we've had packed houses every time. So it looks really great on TV as opposed to, touring to the different arenas like we had initially done, and that's just such a it's such a challenge to do that, especially with the startup group, that I think this is the right thing to do right now, for Lucha Libre. It's definitely a better production,
Right. Let me ask you real quick. I know Mike's got a few questions for you, but I want to find this out real quick because I've never talked to you about it. But how did you come to be connected with these guys?
Well, actually, I worked with Mark Jindrak down at Deep South Wrestling whenever that was running in McDonough, and got to know him. And actually, I was on a trip and was getting just kind of shopping around, and Chris Long called me. Now, I'd never met or really talked to Chris Long prior to this, but he called me and said, hey, look, there's this promotion. It's on MTV. They're looking for you. Mark Jindrak doesn't have your number, but, blah, blah, blah. And so basically through a couple telephone calls and emails, I was picked up by the company. And, so really a lot in part thanks to Mark and Chris Long, of course, who's no longer with us. But it was certainly great to get to know him, while I had the chance. We became really close really fast, through that. But that's how it got started.
Cool. Yeah, the running gag around Georgia for a while, for anybody listening who's not familiar with Nigel or Dan Masters, was that all Nigel had to do was follow Dan Masters around because inevitably Masters was going to get fired. And Nigel would get the gig with a raise. And obviously now being on MTV, you've kind of opened the doors for any number of gigs going forward, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing about it. I love wrestling. It's my passion. It's what I think about 24/7. But I certainly, wouldn't mind doing other realms of entertainment, maybe working on MTV with some music stuff and moving forward. Different entertainment things as a host. I really enjoy hosting events and things like that. I went to school for journalism. That's kind of what I like, And
right.
I definitely would look forward to anything else that came
You know, I mean, pro wrestling's great, but if anybody that's been in the business for, you know, more than a few years will tell you, it's definitely a really tough business, as is entertainment as a whole, but it's just so carny compared to anything else,
yeah.
Which is a good and bad thing. You know, you have to laugh at it sometimes. So,
and we yeah, also
you know how it is.
All right.
So,
now, Nigel, when it came to the show, I mean, how much Lucha Libre did you follow, you know, at all before you were contacted? And knowing Mark Jindrak from before, did you have really any clue on how big he had blown up as Marco Corleone in Mexico?
Well, you know, I knew that Mark had had success in Mexico. I didn't realize how big it was, though. In terms of, I mean, he's like on par with, you know, Brad Pitt level celebrity down in Mexico. I had no idea that was the case. I mean, he's on magazine covers, you know, talk shows. He told me he dated a lot of supermodels down there and actresses that were famous, and that's how he kind of got that notoriety along with the Lucha Libre, of course. But in terms of what I knew going into it, I spoke a little bit of Spanish, and, you know, I had watched some Lucha Libre here and there. And, of course, you know, when WCW was around, they had that. And that's kind of when I was, you know, growing up. I mean, you know, I'm 23 years old. So, you know, that I saw that amount of Lucha Libre. But past that, I really had no knowledge of it. So, for me, I had to learn a lot of things going into the show. And I feel like, you know, for the time that I had to prepare, which was less than a week, you know, that everything kind of turned out as well as it could have for that first season.
What was the biggest, not only having a week, I mean, what was the what's the thing that you actually thought was going to be an issue and had no problem with, and vice versa, too, something where you just got blindsided and didn't lead up to it?
Well, you know, I mean, one of the things is you have to prepare at all times for something like this. And I kind of thought, you know, one day this will happen. I definitely didn't think that it would be Lucha Libre. But, you know, one of those things is I read as much as I could. I studied as much as I could. And I said, my original broadcast partner was Gary Michael Capetta. Not many people know that. But Gary and I set up, you know, I can't think that I got a wink of sleep, really, when I was there at the first tapings in Palm Springs. And I put my best foot forward, and I said, you know, I'm going to make this work. If it works out, if they keep me, great. If not, you know, this just wasn't for me. So a lot of pressure, but all in the same, I knew that if it wasn't meant to be, then it just wasn't meant to be, you know. And there's always doors opening as long as you're talented and you have a good head on your shoulders, you know, in this business. And so that, you know, that's kind of how I looked at it.
Now, coming into the second season, I mean, one of the bigger names, a lot of people were wondering, okay, what's going to happen with Hurricane Helms, you know, with Dragon Gate or Evolve, or what exactly he was going to do? And ends up with Lucha Libre USA. As much as you can say right now, I mean, what are some things to look forward to as we move into the second season?
Well, as you saw in the first season, it's wrestling like I think wrestling should be, in a way. I think that there's a lot more to be seen and a lot more that we can expand on coming up in season two, which I think they've kind of done a great job with the formats being, like I said, at our studio and kind of having the opportunity to sit back and not have to stress out about that kind of thing going on in the shows. As you said, we've got Hurricane Helms or Shane Helms, whatever you want to refer to him as. We've got talent like Petey Williams. We've got a revolving door of different talent. I know that Isis, you know, was there at our last show as well, who I hear, you know, was at the TNA tapings this past week. But, I mean, that's the kind of cool thing about Lucha Libre is you never really know who's going to pop up. Tatanka, Blue Demon Jr. were also at our first taping there at the Hard Rock Casino. You're just going to have, you know, a lot of cameos. You're going to have a lot more of the minis action. I think that our Chicadora division is growing. You know, so you're going to see a lot more talent come in and maybe a few more names that you're familiar with as the season continues. I really can't say, you know, who's coming in, but I know we have quite a list of names that are possibly coming in, you know, that the American fans might be more familiar with. We also have Kevin Kelly and Todd Romero joining our announced team. And those guys have done a great job as far as I'm concerned, Kevin Kelly really is a great mentor for me personally. He just brings a lot to the table as far as I'm concerned. So on that front, that's been great to have him there as well as a mentor. Nothing off of Todd Romero, but Kevin Kelly's been in the game a lot longer, you know, and is just willing to help anybody out, you know, and especially being an announcer. For me personally, it's great to have him there, you know.
Now, I like Kevin Kelly a lot, but this is not going to interfere with Levy Sky, will it?
No, I don't think so. Rebby's still doing her backstage interviews, and I think that Rebby, you know, has been training. Well, I know for sure. I know that she's been training to actually wrestle herself, and I think that moving forward that maybe she'll become an active member of the roster in a wrestling capacity. At least I think that's what her aspirations are. And, of course, you know, now she's dating Matt Hardy, so I'm sure that Matt, you know, they've done a little bit of training, I'm sure. And, you know, hanging out with the Hardys, that might not be a bad thing when it comes to, you know, learning the art of professional wrestling. So
now, Liz Mark Jr. is the current champion, and there's a lot, you know, names that Blue Demon Jr., and there's a couple of them that probably people who are listening to the show aren't really all that familiar with unless they happen to be from Mexico where these guys were big stars. Has there been anyone that, like, anyone that you've seen that just going out of your way or just is there anyone that somebody was reacting to as far as, you know, those guys being there that because Blue Demon has done ads for Coca-Cola with their Full Throttle energy drink, and he's, you know, a very well-known guy.
Right.
Was he someone that a lot of people were looking forward to meeting, or are there certain people that have stuck out as like, okay, everybody wanted to see this guy?
You mean the locker room or just the fans or?
Just fans and just kind of general reaction from, you know, just the wrestling fans that were there, or just like, you know, they were really happy, you know, they got to see a Liz Mark or a Blue Demon.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because here we are in New Mexico, and but we've done really well. I've been surprised, and maybe it's just because I was ignorant to Lucha Libre, but in the markets they've run, these guys are like celebrities, you know, which is the way it should be. Unfortunately, I think in the first season that we did for MTV2 and Tres, you know, there wasn't enough time to educate the fans that are watching at home on the importance of these guys and how really over and popular they are, you know, back in Mexico. And I think that's something that we're going to be able to expand on once again in season two. But in terms of Blue Demon Jr., I mean, it was kind of funny because I think the dynamic of we had a dark match main event, you know, for the first taping there, just to pop the house, you know, Tatanka versus Blue Demon Jr. And, of course, we're on the Indian reservation there in New Mexico, so you're thinking, you know, Tatanka might actually be the, you know, babyface, I guess you would say, in that particular match. But he was booed out of the arena, and the fans loved Blue Demon Jr. You saw so many Blue Demon Jr. masks and El Oriental and, you know, Tenny Ablis Jr. mask. And, of course, Liz Mark as well, you know, was super over. They were just treated as if you were at a WWE show and, you know, Triple H or almost like Chris Candy and Chris Jericho, you know, somebody like that came out. I mean, they were really treated as such. And, you know, Blue Demon Jr., funny enough, never took his mask off. I mean, not even backstage, you know. So it's really – some of the other guys will, but Blue Demon Jr. really honors that. And I thought that was pretty neat because it's 2011 now, you know. And the cat's kind of out of the bag, but I thought that was very old school, you know, cool type of thing.
I'm so amazing at how much it actually means down there, too. I hadn't seen him on there, but Reed Flair is listed, you know, amongst one of the guys that has gone through there. How was Reed as far as, you know, because obviously, you know, a lot of people know him as the son of Ric Flair and everything, but, you know, he did, it was always played up on Nitro when anybody's seen him about he was a good amateur wrestler. How was he in his little development when he was there?
Right. That's actually an interesting question because Reed hasn't had that many matches. Of course, his dad is a legendary, you know, Ric Flair, and those are big shoes to fill. You know, and unfortunately, David, his older brother, found that to be the case as well. But Reed, I think, did a great job considering that he was in a, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was just a regular tag team match. Might have been a six-man, but I think it was just a regular tag match. But he adapted fairly well, a lot better than what I thought he would. That was in Charlotte, North Carolina there, the Bojangles Coliseum. But I thought that he did really well. And actually, Rick showed up. Rick, who is, you know, a big inspiration for me being in the business, showed up and kind of wished him well and things like that. But I think there was a UFC fight that night. So Rick went home and watched that, which I found to be kind of funny. But, yeah, I mean, I think he did a good job. I don't necessarily think that he's, like, main event level, but considering how many matches he had under his belt, you know, and considering that's the first time he probably ever did any Lucha Libre-style wrestling, you know, I thought he did well. I don't think that you're going to see him on the TV show. I think that was just, again, a local pop type thing. To sell tickets, but I think that he did well.
Hey, Nigel, I wanted to ask you, just in general, what actually drew you to professional wrestling and becoming an announcer?
Well, I guess, like, the biggest memory for me was I watched a little bit when I was younger in Hulk Hogan, you know, like back in the early 90s and stuff like that. But what really got me, and again, I'm 23, so you have to work with me here, guys, was that I remember when Goldberg was coming around, my older brother said, you know, look at this guy, man, he's beating up everybody. And sure enough, you know, I tuned in, and I remember I wouldn't leave the television set whenever Goldberg was on TV. And, you know, that's what initially got me in. But I tell you, Ric Flair, you know, was, like I said, really, really a big idol for me. The Rock, you know, really drew me into professional wrestling, Jericho, guys like that. I think the athleticism and the entertainment value and the I don't know, it's just the excitement of it, you know, and I just got drawn into all that. Well, initially I wanted to be a wrestler, you know, which I do wrestle now, but whenever I first broke into the business, I was doing radio over in Athens, Georgia, 103.7, and a show came to Athens, and I said, you know, hey, guys, I could promote this on the air, you know, and if I do that, you know, can I have a spot or something on the show? And it turns out that I have a better voice than I do a body, you know, so I thought to myself, well, I might be better off announcing. I might be able to go further professionally, like, you know, to the ranks of Lucha Libre or TNA or WWE in that capacity. And so that's kind of how it all started. I mean, you know, I was an announcer at that show, and then from there on, that's how I was booked, you know, and up until, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, that's all I did, you know. Now, of course, I wrestle as well, and it's fun, but I don't have any aspirations to be on a big level, you know, as a pro wrestler. I think that I have a lot of fun on the independent scene, and it's a lot of fun, but, you know, if you're going to travel 300-something days a year, you know, and get beat up, you better be ready for it physically, you know. And I'd much rather be behind a microphone.
Yeah, speaking of wrestling, of course, a little plug here for PWA in Carrollton, Georgia, this weekend, I believe, what, Saturday night? You against Rick Steiner.
Yeah, Saturday night, this weekend on the 19th, it's the PWA Winter Heat Show, and Mike Jackson's going to be retiring on that show from wrestling as a whole, I think, from what I understand. I know at least from PWA. I mean, he's been in the business 40 years, and so he'll be doing that. But also, like you said, I'm going to be facing Rick Steiner, which should be a very interesting encounter. I never really thought that would be one of my opponents, but I'm certainly looking forward to it, and I've definitely been training, you know, really hard for this matchup. They've also got a cruiserweight battle royal, and I think the Heritage title will be on the line in a battle royal as well, and the tag team titles, and Chick Donovan and Johnny Swinger and a lot of other guys are going to be there to celebrate with Mike Jackson. So I tell you what, I mean, they've been really having some great shows at PWA and Peach State Wrestling Alliance in Carrollton, Georgia. And I tell you, I think that's probably one of the most successful promotions running around in the state of Georgia, because you have to consider, I mean, the amount of money spent and then the amount of money drawn, you know, and they're doing really good numbers. I think the last time was 285, and, you know, I'm hoping that we get over 300 this time. I mean, it's been really great, the work there. It's it's an old school town, you know, and the fans react accordingly. So it's really fun being there.
Yeah, it's always hot out there. One last question before we wrap up with you. Just wanted to ask you, what were your thoughts on The Rock and the brilliant segment to finish off Raw on Monday night? I saw a tweet from you as soon as it was happening. I believe you said something about you feel like you're 10 years old again. I assume that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. And it did make me feel like I was 10 years old because I remember, you know, being 10 and begging to have, you know, a pair of The Rock's sunglasses, you know, that they had at on the WWF at that time. Magazine, you know, fan magazine or whatever it was, and I've got a pair of the elbow pads, you know, that says, "Do you smell what The Rock is cooking?" And I mean, these are things that just bring back, you know, a smile on my face and just make me fall in love with pro wrestling. Because when you sit there for an hour and 45 minutes and everything is boring, and then something like that comes on, you know, and totally saves the show and just kind of reminds you of why you started this business to begin with, started in the business. It's so refreshing, even though it's, you know, reverting back to that old school. I mean, The Rock is just, what more can you say? It was just so exciting to have him there, and it'll be great to see him at WrestleMania, you know, in Atlanta. So.
All right, and we can probably satisfy a shirt issue for you. Les has got a box he's going to be printing up tomorrow, I think 4,000 shirts, some idea Mike had earlier in the show. So we'll get one of those to you in the mail.
Okay, I appreciate that very much. Yeah, I tell you what. Can I plug something else really quick? I got two things,
sure,
if you don't mind. Of course, you know, coming up March 12th, I talked to Mark Grayson today, and he wanted me to mention that the Will Grayson birthday bash is going to be coming up with X-Pac, Mike Taylor, and a lot of other great wrestlers, and also April the 9th. And Rich, I know you'll probably dig this. You know what I'm about to say, but Georgia Championship Wrestling returning for one more night, and I'll be there teaming up with my good friend Peggy Lee Leather to take on Bambi and Terry Lawler. But in our corner,
right,
Joyce Grable going to be there as well, managing us. So I just can't. You know, I'm a big mark for the Fabulous Moolah and was a friend of hers, and that's great to be involved in that matchup with so many of her old friends. And, of course, you know, that's how I kind of really started out wrestling, was taking on the women and being the Andy Kaufman of, you know, of the 2000s. So that should be a lot of fun. That's April the 9th, and more information, of course, is on Facebook. You know, anybody can find it. If they're listening to the show, they'll know about it, so.
Absolutely. Great cause there at that show in Douglasville. Going to try to get to that one. Nigel, it's been a pleasure having you, man, and we'll catch up with you again down the road.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me. Talk to you soon.
All right, man.
Thanks.
Take care. All right, we'll be back after this one-minute break.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Every day, children are sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
All right, before people start blowing up my inbox, of course, that was just a love tap at Dan Masters. Fun talking with Nigel. We've got a few minutes before we talk to our next guest. Of course, we kind of briefly touched on it there with Nigel. Mike Jackson going to join us for a little bit.
Let me be the uninformed, stupid co-host here. And
all right.
When does – I've never seen Lucha USA – when is it on?
You know, I was checking the website, and even Nigel had told me that he wasn't sure yet about the second season air dates and when it starts. I know they've been taping.
So it hasn't started yet.
Well, the first season, you know, they aired last summer. I think they did, like, what, seven episodes, Mike? And then
They did, and they did them on it. And here's the problem, and it's not a problem in the fact that they're on TV and everything. I mean, but MTV2 and MTV Tres, which used to be the all Spanish MTV station that they basically bastardized and turned into everything else in the MTV empire of just, you know, a lot of non-music things. It was on those channels. The thing is, it would have certain times it would go first run, but then after that, when it comes to all of those shows, they were jumbled about and were never on when they said they were supposed to be on, except for their first run shows. So that's always one of the issues that they're always hung up with when it comes to MTV.
I just like to see Jindrak as a luchador. That's I didn't know Mark was that, you know, deep. I knew he was working in Mexico. I didn't realize that he was that
holy that shit, Les. You wouldn't believe it. That's just, it's all I gotta say. I mean, he's not exactly in that Conan Vampiro class that they were in down there, but I mean, he's about as high up as he could possibly be, you know, for this time, and it's something else.
Well, I don't want to insult anybody to say I'm not a Lucha fan, but I'm not a Lucha fan. If you mentioned Helms and you mentioned Jindrak and Petey, and I'd be interested in just checking and seeing, you know, I mean, regular MTV channel, right? I know I don't have Trace.
MTV2, I believe, is the lead network for them, and I guess that's kind of the second or the secondary MTV channel.
It is, and there's another problem inherent in itself right there. I mean, yes, a lot of people, it's easier now than ever to have digital cable in most places and dishes and stuff like that. But if you have regular cable, you're not actually going to see it because M2 isn't usually on anybody's basic cable channels.
Right. Guys, before we get to the point where we go to the segment with Mike Jackson, big stories this week. I still want to get to the Fedora debacle. God, what a horrible, horrible showing that was. But even bigger than that, obviously, Mike, the UFC sales in Toronto for the April show just through the roof.
Oh, yeah, just like Les was saying earlier about, you know, if you're selling something people want to buy, they're going to buy it. And, you know, they figured 40,000 with, I mean, a ridiculous number of tickets, you know, over $100. It was a calculated gamble laid out by the UFC, and it ended up, you know, not only hitting a jackpot, but going way over, as well as now in the Sky Dome, or formerly used to be the Sky Dome, the Rogers Center. They're talking about 55,000 people for George St. Pierre and Jake Shields in April. Again, that's a lot of people. And if GSP wins, one thing they can do, one thing Dana White has worried about and expressed concern over is how people can see the show. Now, it's going to be hard enough to see, but, I mean, they're bringing in risers and things like that, where Vince McMahon would go WrestleMania 6 style and get 67,000 people in there because he could. Dana White's got some concern over the people actually going to be able to see this thing, you know, in a stadium that size. And granted, you're going for the experience when you go to a show like that, but still, you know, he wants them to be able to see. But if they can do that with this and GSP wins and the talk of him moving up in weight to 185, George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva in Dallas, where you don't have a concern with people being able to see because all you do is look up at that massive Tron that Jerry Jones has got hanging up at the top of that stadium and all the stuff outside and everything else that goes with it that we could be seeing. I mean, it could be, again, UFC has not really wanted to run stadium shows. We may have turned a corner on that when they get the right fights, and I can just picture Anderson Silva and GSP in Dallas. That would be a big, big deal.
So not a knock on UFC and this, that, and the other. I mean, my God, I love it. But do you think maybe there was some people in Toronto thinking the Beatles were coming back or something? I mean, that was just nuts how fast they were moving.
Oh, and no, and all you have to, and know what that does too, if you can picture a map and picture Ontario and New York State. Okay, now Montreal, Quebec, and Montreal especially they've always been rabid fight fans there, boxing for years. I mean, there are, for as much, you know, jokes as you could throw out about Quebecers, there are people up there. There are some fighting ass people up there, and they've always enjoyed it. And MMA was always legal there. MMA has not been legal in Ontario. One of the things they've had to crack is, you know, Melbourne being one, they can go to Sydney, but they're not in Melbourne, the biggest town. They were not in Toronto, and they're also not in New York. And with the way New York needs money, just like every other state, with the way that MMA is now being approached by the mainstream and everything that goes around it, it's still going to be a tough road to hoe in New York. But with that said, all you have to do is picture a map and picture Dana White turning around with a shit-eating grin on his face and looking at New York, because there's another thing. I mean, the UFC has already said they will hold a show at Madison Square Garden, which is the ultimate affirmation. But they also want to hold a show in Buffalo, taking advantage of people that would come over the border. That would mean in 1 year you would have two events that would be massive money makers for every single person involved, for everyone involved. And that's, again, with this success in Toronto and the show that's going to go around this whole thing, looking over the river at New York, that's, again, their thing this year, one of their big things this year, as it has been with Mark Ratner, and one of the reasons they hired him from the Nevada State Athletic Commission, it's just they've been pushing. A lot of obstacles are down. They are pushing hard for New York this year.
All right. Now, also, Strikeforce. I mean, obviously, kind of hinted at, I guess, what the highlight was for me. I mean, my God, that was just brutal to watch.
Man, I don't want to sound like Dusty Rhodes here, but why such a thombo mood? Why so upset?
Just God, I didn't anticipate Fedor going in and just getting his ass kicked.
He didn't either.
Just unreal.
I didn't see the whole. I saw there was a somebody sent me the link to the clip. I'm going to ask you this, Mike. Fedor didn't look in that good a shape to me.
Well, here's the thing. That's how he usually always looks, and there's why a lot of people before the fight, as we moved into bigger heavyweights, you know. Should he cut to 205? That's him. That's what he does, and he is now. That's why he's also being passed as his time moves on by cross training. You know, people like George St. Pierre, but you know he doesn't. You know, again, one of the things he's bitched about with Alistair Overeem has been steroids, and there's the whole separate thing with Alistair Overeem and Pride Fighting Championships in Japan and all that sort of stuff. You know, he faced steroid monsters in Japan before. Because of the way it is there. But, you know, he's always looked the same. The thing that got me was not his physical look as much as the look in his eyes, which is, I'm kind of done with this. And sets as much after the fight, the translation that went out of, well, I'm thinking about retiring and maybe it'll be. He actually, when that was, you know, somebody had written into Dave and Brian to say, no, I speak Russian, he flat out said he was retiring. Now he's coming off of that. Pressure, I'm sure, from his management. I don't know how much pressure from Scott Coker, but I'm sure pressure from Scott Coker, especially because of the rating that the fight did. But, I mean, he's just, I'm not sure if I'm him how much more there is to prove, and now that you've lost two in a row, yeah, he can still beat a lot of heavyweights. Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira is still in Pride. He can still beat almost all the other heavyweights out there for the most part, but there's a tier of guys that it doesn't look like he's going to be able to beat anymore. And, you know, for one of the arguably the greatest fighters in MMA history, I don't think you want to be a gatekeeper. And I think it's just that's how he's always looked physically, and especially that's been one of his complaints when you compare him to the other guys. But it's more of the look he had after that fight. Not when you look into his eyes, because he only had one after the fight, but when you look into that eye, you can see it's obviously not exactly there for him anymore. The drive isn't there.
And obviously, as anticipated at that show, Gina Carano announces her return. Don't think that's any big surprise.
When do you think we'll be... how not to cut a promo.
Yeah, yeah. When do you think we'll actually see her in action again?
You know, I don't know. I would assume, and again, I don't know how long she's been training for or what exactly the movie deal has been or anything like that. But, and again, they're going to have to try to find her a fighter at 145 pounds, too. Granted, she could probably fight anybody, and people are going to watch it because people love Gina Carano, and deservedly so. I mean, as bad as the promo was, you know, she's cute, she giggles, and she can kick ass, and... I mean, she survived. That's the one thing people are always going to remember her for, too, is she survived Cyborg Santos. She survived that woman. I mean, that fight was ended after the first round, but, I mean, that was amazing. That's what fighters do, and hopefully she'll always get the credit she actually deserves for that, because as much of a slaughter as it was, I mean, that was a hell of a performance she put on in that round. So I don't know if it's going to be July. I would figure sometime around then. I'm not sure of the Strike Force schedule. I'd have to look at it. But, well, to be honest, I don't think it goes out that far, considering they haven't even given a location for the second round of this Grand Prix yet. They have a date for it, but unfortunately no location left, you know, yet, which is mind-boggling. But I don't know if it's going to be early fall or late summer.
You know, you can knock her promo abilities all you want. She's cute. She gets a pass. The Strike Force card coming up this weekend, of course, is going to be on Showtime. Not a lot of name value here.
No, it looks like most of them. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's kind of like most of their shows for the most part. I mean, there's not a whole lot of name value on there. You know, Ryan Couture, obviously, is the biggest one on there, but... You know, all these challengers-type shows, I mean, it's Showboxer is the same way. I mean, it's just, there's only so much stuff you can watch, and I love Showtime for showing it. I mean, I really do. If I could have HDNet and Showtime, I'd be an incredibly happy person, because the option to want to watch stuff, at least I want to have it, and they do show a lot of boxing. But there's only so many of these Showbox shows and Strikeforce Challenger shows that you really go out of your way to see. You know, really, I just kind of wait to find out if they were worth seeing or not, or if there's somebody that was worth seeing on them before I go back and watch them. Like, you know, this Friday, I'm actually going to be in Salisbury for the ESPN Friday Night Fight Show with Fernando Guerrero, which is the first fight being shown now in 3D for all 17 people out there who actually have a 3D TV. You'll be able to watch ESPN's Friday Night Fights in 3D for the first time ever in North America.
All right, guys. I'll tell you what, let's take a 3-minute break and get our breath, and we'll be back with Mike Jackson.
Hi, everybody. This is Geddy Lee for RAD. To many of us, drunk driving is something that other people do. Certainly not one of our friends or relatives would do such a thing. When you see someone who's had too much to drink, about to get into a car, urge them to give up the keys and find alternate transportation. Always choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, you should too.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, parents. Introducing the Communicizer. Go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, Joe.
I love you, Dad.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia Wrestling History? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today, and not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Fairy residence. Tooth speaking. Sorry, there's no credit fairy here. What's that? He magically raises your credit score? Yeah, there's no credit fairy. But you can improve your credit by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Money under your pillow? Sorry, kids only.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. Brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
When the night has come.
All right, back on Ringside Rap. As a reminder, as we talked earlier, the PWA show in Carrollton this weekend. Not only is Nigel Sherrod going to be a part of it, taking on Rick Steiner, but and all the other people he mentioned, but the big one, Mike Jackson joins us now. He's actually billed to be, I guess, retired. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, great. It's great to be there, guys. I appreciate you guys letting me be on your show. I've heard a lot of good things about it.
All right.
You know, I remember when I was a little boy, I wanted to carry Mike Jackson's bag one time. And he kicked me.
Now you're making me feel old already, right?
I may be the only guy older than you, Michael.
In those days. Oh, man.
Oh,
well, I am old, so I guess that's it's only fair.
Now, Les and Mike, did you guys? How often did you guys work together in the same territory?
Now, when was this? What are you talking about?
No, I'm asking like you guys, you and Les Thatcher. How many times did you guys work in the same?
Oh gosh,
place?
I know if I'm not mistaken.
We've never worked together. We've never actually worked against one another ever.
I don't think so. But
uh-huh.
Now you will. I think we did some things with Nick Gulas back when I first started, didn't we? Did you in that Gulas territory?
Yeah, I guess maybe then. Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably in the 70s. I started in 72 was my first year. In 73,
no,
I
wasn't in the
Gulas
territory there. I wasn't.
Yeah.
I last time I was in the Gulas territory was just in 70. And then
okay, I remember you being there because I was going and you know, I was in it. I was just with an independent group before I got a good break. So I'm sure I talked to you there, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and then,
then
you worked when Fuller bought Mobile, you were working the territory there, right?
Yes, several times. That was sold and bought by different people two or three different times.
Yeah.
I also worked with the Gulf Coast group, Rocky McGuire, and that group up there, you know, the
right.
Welches and the Fields brothers and, you know, that group. So I worked with all up in that territory for years, yeah.
Now, you said you got started in 72. What was that with Gulas?
No, my first year was independent. I worked with an independent group for about 13 months. Before I realized if I was going to get killed every night, I needed to try to make some money for it. I wasn't making any money with the independent group, but they gave me good experience. I mean, it's something that I really cherish. I worked for a guy named Bob Milliken. I don't know if you remember that name. But we ran small shows around, you know, hit-miss type thing. But it was a good experience. I got a lot of good experience. I learned a lot of things from those guys. But Batwell Auditorium was running every Monday night, so I'd go up there on Monday night, you know, and try to get in with Nick Gulas, and finally got a break.
Now, who actually?
You know, they weren't called Independents in 1972; they were called Outlaws.
Oh,
yeah.
there you go. Yeah.
Well, I was with a lot of those.
Hey, Mike, who did you spend time training with when you first got started?
You know what? I know it's hard to believe, and this is the honest truth. I never was trained by anybody. What I would do, how I got into business, when I really got a break in the business, was I would go up to the old TV station, and I would set the ring up for the shows.
Yeah.
And I'd park cars that night, and then I'd come in and ring the bell and sit there. But in the process of before the show started, when I set that ring up, I would get up in the ring with just a couple of guys, and we'd just fool around. And, you know, I'd see guys do moves, and I'd try it. And, of course, I busted my tail a few times. But I pretty much trained myself, believe it or not. I know it's hard to believe how you can do that, but that's pretty much what I did. I didn't have anybody ever teach me anything, lessons or anything. No schools or anything.
Now, you know, it's funny because we had Nigel Sherrod on with us earlier.
I know Nigel.
And I was gonna say something and I forgot about it, but he had said something. He was talking about Rock, you know, The Rock showing back up at Raw on Monday night,
and how
that was old school for him. And I couldn't help but laugh or chuckle to myself because, you know, what's old school to me is not old school to say you and Les. What's old school to Nigel is definitely not old school to me.
Right.
It's really funny. When we all look back at our past and the good old days, it was kind of a little bit different for everybody. But
well, old school with me would be wrestling with his daddy a lot of years on TVs and different things.
There you go.
I know his daddy real well.
Talk about working for Nick Gulas.
Well, Nick Gulas was really a hard guy, but he was strictly business, which I liked. I mean, I didn't respect it in those days as much as I do now, but he was strictly business, and he ran the Tennessee territory. You know, he would run Birmingham on Monday night, and then somewhere in Tennessee on Tuesday, and then usually somewhere in Kentucky or Tennessee on Wednesday. Nashville was a big town on Wednesday night. Thursday night we'd go to Bowling Green, Kentucky. Friday night we'd Huntsville, Alabama. Saturday night, Memphis TV or Chattanooga TV, just courting. But it was an everyday, and sometimes on Saturday, three times a day, you know, do two different TV shows, and then maybe either go to Arkansas or Memphis or Chattanooga, according to what end you were in. He ran the Memphis end, too, at that time before Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler took ill.
You know, I it's funny because I remember watching Georgia Championship Wrestling as a kid, and you know, before I knew anything about this business, I was probably one of your biggest fans. I always felt bad for you because you just never got that win. But
you should have been where I was.
Yeah,
you felt bad. You should have been on the end I was on.
Yeah, but it sure is funny. Like, you know, kind of once you know what the business is about. You know, the respect factor for guys like yourself who did, unfortunately, maybe you never reached the pinnacle that guys dream of, but you were the guy that a booker would put with the young guys to get them over and teach them something.
Teaching is the exact word.
Yeah, and also to make some of the other guys look good. And
you know,
let me say this,
the guys in that position had to be as good of workers as the guys on top. Because they had to get somebody else over and without killing themselves off as well, and
exactly.
that's a lost art today.
Yep, I remember when Ole Anderson came to me and said, "Look, I've got this guy coming in, and you've got to teach him some things." Of course, how did I know it was Road Warrior Animal?
Well, oh, ouch.
And of course, exactly. I like to die before I get anything. But you know, just to show you how guys really respected Les, exactly what you're talking about. I was on a show here in Birmingham called Wrestle Birmingham it had to be a couple of years ago, I guess, when the lady was running pretty strong, and Road Warrior Animal came and did a show, and there was probably 20, 25 guys on the card. And he needed a partner for that night, and he went and asked, I think it was Robert Fuller was maybe booking the show or something, and he went and asked Robert Fuller, he said, "I want Mike Jackson to be my partner." And it made me feel really good because all the years that he killed me, you know, it meant something, you know. So I got to be his partner that night, and he even asked me for one of my T-shirts to wear, and I said, "Man, that's pretty good." I didn't even charge him. But, it does. I helped a lot of guys in those days, and I, you know, I really appreciate, you know, the guys that's come back and said things to me like that. And, you know, I get phone calls occasionally, get invited to some, you know, fan fest and some different things with some Legends things. And, you know, it means a whole lot.
What was your favorite territory to work?
Well, I did the Oklahoma territory for Bill Watts, which Bill Watts is probably one of the greatest guys I've ever worked for. You talk about all business. Now, Bill Watts was, you know, he could find $5 under a rock when I couldn't find nothing but a wet spot. You know, he knew how to manage money, and he got us into things. I really loved that territory, but it was so big. It was so, you know, I mean, it was just hours and hours of riding. So I'm going to probably say I worked in the Florida territory when Dory Funk was doing the booking. You know, when Eddie Graham was still alive, I worked there for a lot of years. Hmm. And I liked all those territories, but I'd probably say Tennessee. That was where I first got, you know, you never forget your first love, you know, and that's probably where it was.
Now, I've been hogging the conversation. Mike, Les?
No, I think that Mike has made a transition. I saw Mike worked at the Fan Fest in Charlotte. And
yeah.
I was amazed. I was doing color on the shows, and everybody told me about the year before, or I guess it was 2 years ago, wasn't it, Mike, that you worked
no,
there the first
before.
Time?
I've only been to two. It was a year before because I'd only been to the two of them.
Yeah, and everybody told me, and I'm thinking, oh, okay. But I thought, damn, Mike Jackson's got a shot of youth from some damn place. He's found a youth.
The good Lord's protecting me, the good Lord. Yeah, but yeah, I really enjoy that. That was great. That was a great night. Yeah, yeah. I still love this business. I really work hard. You know, I give it my all when I'm out there 110%. You know, the people deserve it, and I do get a shot of adrenaline. It seems like when you get out there, when you step between those ropes, just something happens. I guess.
I will say this. You talk about Mike still being able to go. I think it was probably about 5 years ago. A guy named Rock Parsons was running shows. We were talking about Carrollton being a hot town earlier.
Yeah.
Rock Parsons had that place. He had like almost 1,000 people in there one night. And we're going to talk a little bit about this guy a little bit later, but the late Ted Allen.
Right.
You guys worked a 2 out of 3 falls match that night.
Uh-huh.
And you guys, you went 3 falls. And it went about 45 minutes in total, and you
yep.
couldn't put most of the young guys that are in fantastic shape. You couldn't put them in for more than 10 minutes.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a whole different world. I mean, everybody calls me old school all the time. Every show I'm on, but I don't mind that because that to me, they may think it's a cut down, but I think it's an honor. You know, the old school was that's where I learned, and I guess that's what I'll always be.
Well, there's a difference between working and bumping.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes talent to work. It just takes a lot of nerve to bump.
Well, what I tell guys all the time, Les, and you can identify with this, there's a million wrestlers out there. Now, everybody's a wrestler. Everybody's got a pair of boots or should I say a pair of kick pads and tennis shoes. And every kid out there in the world is a wrestler today. Everybody's a world champion because you can buy belts everywhere in the world. But there's very few workers out there. I don't want to be a wrestler. I want to be a worker, if that
yep,
makes sense.
You're
now,
right.
That may not make sense, but I know it makes sense to you, Les. You know, and that's
yeah,
what I tell guys.
Damn sure does.
Yeah. They want me to train them and stuff. You know, I tell them, I said, guys, there's a million wrestlers out there, but when you learn to be a worker, that's when you'll do something for this business, and this business will do something for you.
Now, my memories of you, Mike, you know, come actually from watching when you'd be on Saturday night, you know, back in the day, you know, seeing remember your wrestling, Tully Blanchard, and I was always
yeah.
a big fan of junior heavyweights. I remember you always announced the Alabama junior heavyweight champion, and I was big mark for champions, too, in the back of that inside
yep.
wrestling where they did the roll call of champion. You'd always be their United States junior heavyweight champion. You had to
yep.
wrestle in territories, Florida and Tennessee and Oklahoma, that were obviously very good to junior heavyweights. How did you feel as far as, you know, the reputation that junior heavyweights got nationally in your era, especially when I remember in the 80s, where unfortunately they really got looked down upon?
Yeah, it's a big man's game. There's no doubt about that. I mean, especially nowadays. When I first got into business, if you weighed 225 or, you know, 200 to 225, you were considered a heavyweight. Now, if you're not 280, 290, nobody wants to talk to you. You know, I guess it's like football and everything else. But I was in territory. Most of the territory was always they didn't put them in the – we were definitely not the headliners. We were not there to put a lot of people in the seats. We kind of – what I like to call it, a lot of people call us curtain jerkers and, you know, first match, opening match, whatever. But what I like to think about is guys would come to us and say, hey, set the tempo for this show. Set the atmosphere. You know, make these other guys work even harder, you know, even though they're bigger. You know, they don't have to do a whole lot of stuff. When you're small, you got to do a lot more stuff than the bigger guys have to do, you know. But most everybody took care of us pretty well and treated us pretty equal. I was pretty impressed with it.
Hey Mike, I wanted to ask you about a report I'd seen, I guess, I don't know, probably a couple years ago. There was apparently a show that you were on. I don't know. I think it was in Alabama. But apparently police got called to the show, and some fan actually called 911, I guess, to get some help for you.
I probably needed it. It probably was me calling 911.
Does this ring a bell at all? Because I remember this story like just literally went all over the internet. It was something about a guy with an axe or something, and police came and.
I remember that in Haleyville.
Yeah,
we
weren't you retiring then?
That was what?
Was that a retirement or a retirement thing you were doing then?
You know, I can't remember exactly. It's been, like you said, 2 or 3 years ago, but I do remember the police coming, and I do remember a guy getting so upset he went out. As a matter of fact, I was wrestling a guy, I think a guy by the name of, he calls himself El Mexicano, Antonio Garza. You may have heard of him. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mexican, but really, really a great worker. And he and I had one heck of a match. And I forgot what he did to me. I can't remember. But I got a bad shoulder anyway, naturally, from all these years of these crazy bumps. And I think my shoulder came out of place, and some guy went and called 911. And the people got so mad at him that they went out. One guy went out and got an axe and was going to knock the windows out of his car. But the bad thing was the guy had the wrong car. So it was one of the matter of fact, it was one of the good guys' cars that he was going to do. And they finally ended up calling the police to settle this guy down. But that happened 2 or 3 times in Hayleyville. That was a pretty hot town. We had that thing going pretty good.
Now that's pretty impressive in this day and time. I mean, usually you heard about those stories in like the 60s and 70s,
exactly.
And stuff like that.
That's why I was really proud of it, because nowadays, you know, and I love wrestling, and I'll never write a book about it. I'll never get on Hard Copy or 60 Minutes and try to bury it, because it's been so good to me. Some of these guys that do that really, really upset me, you know, when they make a living out of it, and then all of a sudden they don't get in the way, and they want to destroy and expose everything. But it's the business has been really good to me, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. If I had it to do all over again, of course, I wish I was about 21 again instead of 61, but I'd do it all over again, you know.
Yeah, you know, the thing that amazes me about that, though, is just the passion. I mean, you know, the fact that you can bring such passion out of fans that they're willing to go get an axe
yeah.
to go tear up some guy's car,
yeah.
That's just insane.
Well,
that's great.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Les. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I said that's something that most of the young independent kids don't even understand. A riot or people actually wanting to hurt you cut you with a knife or anything. You talk to them about that. They look at you like, huh? What the hell are you talking about?
Well, what I see nowadays that's changed over the years, I don't train anybody anymore. People ask me all the time. I get calls every week, but I don't do it anymore. But what guys do now, they train guys how to jump through ropes and jump over the top ropes backwards and all kind of crazy stuff, and which is, I guess there's a place for that nowadays. But what they never teach them is the psychology of wrestling. You know, I try to teach them more of the psychology than I do. I can't teach a guy how to run and jump through the ropes. He'll have to teach himself that and learn the hard way. But I can teach him, you know, step one, step two, step three, you know, and let the people out there sitting out there in the audience, you know, I want them to believe what I'm doing is I'm giving them 100% and it's real. So they don't understand the psychology of it. They understand all the other stuff, and you can't compete with, you know, running over each other with cars and shooting each other with guns and all that sort of thing. But that's why people, I think, don't believe quite as much as they used to in wrestling, you know, years ago.
Was there anybody specific that you've wrestled over the years that just basically, you know, whenever you got called on to work with them that night, it was a night off for you?
Oh, gosh, many of them. Brad Armstrong was probably one of the smoothest workers I've ever been with in my life. I worked with him the first time he ever wrestled in Birmingham, Alabama, here at the big racetrack at BIR. And when I locked up with him, and he was like 18 years old, I mean, it was locking up with a guy that had been in the business 20 or 30 years. He was always great. You know, Ted Allen was another one. I worked with Ted Allen hundreds of times. And Ted Allen was always, he was one of the last few guys to ever take a flying head scissor, you know. You know, guys like that. Ric Flair. I worked with Ric Flair many times, and Ric Flair was about as smooth as you could possibly be. There's been many over the years.
And then there was Road Warrior.
I want to echo what Mike said about Brad. I've always said Brad is one of the most sound technical performers I've ever seen
exactly.
in the business, and just exactly. never was in the right place at the right time.
Right. And, you know, some guys just pick it up. I mean, Brad, you know, you could say, Brad, I want you to do this, and he could do it perfect, like he'd done it all his life. Some guys, you go over it 30 or 40 times, they still can't pick it up, you know. He just had that natural ability that most guys don't have. You know, he was born with it. Of course, he comes out of a pretty good family of wrestlers, you know, with Bullet Bob and the boys. So he come out of a pretty good lineage of wrestling.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah.
And, of course, with his daddy teaching him, it was like if he didn't do it right, he got his ass kicked. So
exactly. And I talked to Bob the other day, and don't think it's 71 or 72. He still can't do it today if he needs to. Bob's still one of my favorite people. We talk, you know, pretty regular.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I got to tell you, Mike, it's been fun talking to you. I wish the segment could have been longer. We're going to catch up with you again down the road and do this again, go a little more in-depth.
Anytime, brother. It's my pleasure. And, you know, I'm going to be in Carrollton Saturday night, and I hope all you guys will come out and see us. It's going to be a great show.
All right, man. You guys have a good one, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Please call me. Good to see
care,
you.
Buddy.
From you, Les. Thank
right,
you.
Good to talk to you, buddy.
All right. And Mike Jackson, I've always kind of wanted him on the show and never really knew how to directly get in touch with him, and I managed to this week because I saw the deal about them advertising a retirement ceremony for him. So I know that's he's done a couple of those, but, you know, we'll see. You talked about Brad Armstrong. I did want to mention this. I think Brad Armstrong is going to end up being on our Thursday night show here on the GWH Radio Network here in the next few weeks. At least I'm getting some feedback along those lines. That would be kind of cool. And I will go ahead and announce now so I don't forget to get it in here before we get out of here tonight. Next week we will have Ring of Honor champion Roderick Strong here. So that should be
cool.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, they're going to be in Dayton a week from Friday, so.
Yeah, you heading up there?
Yeah, as far as I know, unless something comes up that I've got something I have to do, yes. It's the only matches I go to around here is when they come to the area.
Best show in town, right?
Well, it sure tops anything else around here.
Yeah.
Hey, I was watching the Georgia Championship Wrestling from November 81 leading into the annual tag tournament on Thanksgiving, and there were the Armstrongs, and it blew me away. One, I just thought of how underappreciated Brad Armstrong is always going to be, because he was really good for a really long time, and just, let's say you said, wrong place, wrong time. And then Bob Armstrong, and then thinking about Carl Stern and other people talking about he as a heel. And sometimes on his show, we'll play some clips of when Bob Armstrong was a heel, and I guess his heart was never into it, but everybody said he would have been the greatest heel out there if he could have just stayed with it.
I worked with Bob. He worked heel briefly in Knoxville. I worked with him one time up there. Yeah, you know, he was just, but he was just such a natural babyface. I mean, it was just it came so, you know, his fire on a comeback. I mean, yeah, he was a good heel, but, you know, if he were to come into a territory for me, I would have still featured him as a babyface. He just, you know, because it just, I don't know, he just seemed to fit that role so much more comfortably, and maybe not so much, you know, I mean, I think Bob was talented enough he could work any way you want him to work, but it's just in the way that, you know, when he did that babyface promo, when he did that that fiery comeback, it was so natural that it you know, people just went along for the ride.
That's it. God, I always love Armstrong and Horner against when they would face the Midnight Express and teams like that too. God, there's my old school. I miss those days.
Oh, you know, we mentioned Teddy Allen. It's out there, I guess, on YouTube somewhere, but. Somebody put the link on my Facebook page for Ted against Norvell Austin in Knoxville, and Phil Rainey and I are doing the commentary. And I'm looking at this slim young Teddy, and it was fun to sit down and watch and reminisce about.
You know, speaking of Ted Allen, well, actually speaking of Brad Armstrong, real quick, just one note on that. Before we move on, Brad can still go. Last time I saw him was a couple years ago, and he put the young kid he was wrestling to shame. It was really, really kind of sad in a way.
Is he going to be on our show ever?
Yeah, we'll try to work that out.
I started traveling. I was down when he broke in. Well, just right after he broke in. And he and Bob and I traveled a lot together. Brad and I traveled a lot together when I was running the tours up here for Georgia WCW.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'd love to have him on sometime.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll work that out. The Big Ted Allen Memorial was memorial event was this past weekend in Villarica, Georgia. Reported 650 fans and fellow professionals paid tribute, and unfortunately, due to some family stuff, I was not able to attend. I really wanted to, and I hate it, and I love the report that was written. A lot of good stuff going on. We had some video up on the site at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com if you want to go check that out. It was from 11 Alive News. They were out there and did a little feature on some of the fans, talking to some of the fans and some of the guys. Just, you know, a huge loss to this community from where I'm at here in Atlanta, in the area.
There's a guy, we talk about all the stars and everything, but Ted was just a solid performer who gave 100%. Whatever you needed done in the ring, Teddy would do. If it was putting somebody over, getting over himself, whatever. But he was always very respectful of the business and the boy. And I remember when he was just a young guy, you know, he first came around Knoxville, just, you know, so polite and so respectful and just, you know, if you didn't take to him, it was because you were stupid. I mean, he was just that good a guy. And you know, this. I'm like you. Had I have had the opportunity to make the trip down there, I'd have loved to come, you know, to that memorial show and said a few words about him or for him or whatever. But he was just a super guy. I loved him to death. And, you know, there was never, I mean, it was the kind of thing, if he were delivering a ring any place near here and he thought he was going to come through, he'd call and say, hey, I'm coming through. You're going to be, you know, if you're going to be available, let's grab lunch or something. Well, just he and the young man, this last young man he trained, damn it, I can't remember his name.
Kyle Matthews.
Huh?
Kyle Matthews.
Yeah, Kyle Matthews. Yeah. They were out watching baseball. They were out doing Major League Baseball last year, and came up to see they'd been to St. Louis. I think it was St. Louis to watch the Cardinals, and they came into Cincinnati for a Reds game, and they came over and spent part of the afternoon here with me at the house, and just Teddy and I catching up and everything. And I'm so glad I had that opportunity. Before he passed. But, it may not be a name that's a household word to a lot of people, but damn it, he was a guy who just gave his life's blood to the business and should be respected every minute of the way.
Absolutely. One other thing I wanted to ask you guys about, if you saw this week, one of our hosts on one of our shows here on the network, Dave Wills, the crying wrestling fan on Tosh.0.
Who was the scrawny ass that was trying to look like the warrior?
Good Lord, what a segment.
Yeah, Daniel Tosh, who I think Lagana had said this, may have had a stint on WWE's writing team, you know, one of those in and out sort of things at some point along the line. But yeah. He's got this thing on his show where he makes fun of clips on the internet and, you know, pokes fun at him. He does a very good job, but he's a really good stand-up comic. But he's got this thing called Web Redemption, where if whatever happened, he finds that person, and whatever embarrassing situation that happened to them, he gives them a chance to turn it around and obviously pokes fun at them along the way. And yes, Dave Wills, the crying wrestling fan, got his web redemption.
And let me just say this. Dave, of course, one of the co-hosts of the Dave and Danger Show here on Tuesday nights, he puts this out today. Straight off the appearance of Tosh.0 with millions of viewers, Dave Wills is now taking bookings for wrestling and comic book conventions, wrestling shows, interviews, and public speaking engagements. Please contact
Dave@yahoo.com.
Has there ever
He's a nice kid.
He is. He's great. Incredible. And you know
what?
A lot of
what other dude has gotten this much out of crying, though? What's been the last dude that has been able to stretch out crying this far?
Listen, if there's any money in it, I'll start crying right now. Just give me the word, okay?
I'm jealous. I wouldn't mind.
find it. Like, yeah, Coco Beware was there, and Sergeant Slaughter, and Ted DiBiase, and yeah, like, why not me? Somebody give me some money.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, a lot of people, when that clip first found its way to the internet and went viral, a lot of people out there mocking Dave. But you know what? Here's the thing. You got to admire anybody that's that passionate about anything. I don't care what it is. You know, he loves the professional wrestling business, and just knowing him, you know, I didn't know him at that time, but knowing him since then, he's an incredible guy to be around. He really is. He knows.
Yeah, you know, when I run into him, I saw him in Charlotte, but he and his wife, they're just so personable and really good people. They really are.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I got to tell you, Tosh is a funny guy. But some of what he said there was I don't know, good Lord, some pretty cruel comments toward the wrestling fan community.
Well, he did, like, always a little bit vicious. And then, look, you got to expect, and Dave not being stupid either, you know exactly what you're getting in for on that show because, you know, as you saw, it's not like it's, you know, too brutally bad or anything like that, but you do expect to get zinged really hard. But then again, you know, if you were crying and look at the viral sensation that he was for that, if, you know, if that didn't break him, and it didn't, nothing ever could. And the one thing as a wrestling fan, especially one who, because that happened when he was talking to the Midnight Express and Jim Cornette, there wasn't, and they'd be lying if they said otherwise, there wasn't a wrestling fan out there who at least had a little small part of them like, well, yeah. Because you know what, that's exactly how you started as a wrestling fan. That's when these people were your heroes and things like that. So if any wrestling fan out there didn't say that a little bit of them actually could very much sympathize with him, even if they were making fun of him when it happened, they'd be lying.
Hey, that's how I met Les.
Jesus.
Oh, God. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and then he asked me for my face on his T-shirt. The thing that got me, the best part of the segment for me was the Ultimate Warrior running the ropes and the look on Dave's face. Like, what the hell is this guy doing? He's just holding a straight face there while he's doing this madness. It was insane. So anyway, Elimination Chamber coming up this week. Anything worth a damn here? Or is it save your money for WrestleMania?
No, well... Yeah, you know, of the three, you know, obviously you got WrestleMania, the Chamber, and Royal Rumble. Yeah, this would be the one I would skip to. With that said, Lawler and Miz ought to be, you know, interesting. And you know what, if you can convince yourself that, okay, I'm going to throw money at this one because of, it, you know, how good Jerry Lawler has been, I can understand that. It's going to be a test for Alberto Del Rio and Kofi Kingston. Again, because you know what Alberto's being prepped for, and even though, you know, Dos Cross Jr. has been leaps and bounds better than anyone has thought he could be, it's still, he's going to be main eventing WrestleMania, and there a lot is going to be expected out of him, so a good performance with Kofi is going to be pretty important, and then you have the whole thing with the Chamber, so, and again, too, I don't know who knows what's going to happen with Rock, too, or how many times that he has committed to, but obviously on Monday, with what he was saying, he made it sound like it's going to be, you're going to see him more than just once leading into WrestleMania. He's going to be popping up here. So it's going to be interesting to see if he actually ends up on the show or if they do anything with Cena leading into that or out of that.
Les, you getting it?
I'm just listening. Am I buying it? Are you ribbing me? No, I don't buy pay-per-views. I see them, but I don't buy them. It's like I don't buy tickets to wrestling matches. If you've heard of me doing that, it's a false rumor. Take my word for it.
Now, guys, obviously some news comes out about the Hall of Fame. I guess instead of airing it on Saturday, and having to rush themselves through an edit job, apparently, I guess now they're going to air it, what, Monday? It's going to air Monday, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
So is this good or bad for the ceremony itself? Because, Obviously, I guess last year the issue was, at least with the live crowd, was that they were it appeared rushed, and it appeared like guys were being told to get off and abort their speeches and this, that, and the other. Is this better to just give the guys, hey, free rein?
If it doesn't rush things, I would, you know, if you're really going to honor somebody, do some guys get, well, that's like at the Hall of Heroes in Charlotte this past year, Jerry Briscoe was introducing Greg Valentine, and I was thinking the same thing, but when Jerry finally finished, Greg got up and said, "Damn, Jerry, you're long-winded." I think, you know, if you're really going to honor these guys, then it's an emotional time for them, and especially, you know, in front of a crowd that size, and these people are from all over the world, you have to allow them. It's an emotional time, and it's not like, come on, let's don't try to micromanage this too and control their emotions. You've basically said these guys are special, so allow them to be, you know, special, and allow them to communicate what their feelings are without editing it or waving at them or whatever, you know. And if it allows that, I'm all for whenever the hell they air it, you know. Because I believe the people who want to see it are going to watch it anyway, no matter when it's on.
Yeah, I used to, you know, watch different award shows, whether it be music or acting, you know, the Oscars, Grammys, whatever. But you know, when people get up to give their thank you speeches when they win an award, there's nothing worse than the piano or the little orchestra pit kicking up, you know, 60 seconds after they actually first start saying thank you. It's like, you know, give these people their time, let them do their things, start the damn show earlier or cut down on commercials, you know?
Well, that's what always got me with the WWE one. It's just like, you know, you did this with wrestling for years, especially at Madison Square Garden, and everybody else did who had curfews. Have the main event on a little bit earlier. If you were so, you know, you had to get this thing on 11 o'clock on Saturday night on the USA Network because that's when they wanted it and it had to be there, real simple. Start the show a little bit early. Have the two, or really that's all it is two, you know, presentations of Hall of Fame guys who you're going to have on the TV show, have them go, let them go crazy editing that, and then have everybody else on. I mean, I don't see the difficulty is in that, or like is going on now, just give them, you know, do it on the day before. Do it at 6 o'clock from 6 to 7 on USA, leading into the pre-show for WrestleMania, or I guess WrestleMania starts an hour early anyway. Do that. It would have made more sense. And again, having the Funks go for 5 minutes, it was, you know, it's just, amongst everybody else, it's just really insulting. And I know this stemmed from WrestleMania 24 with Flair and with The Rock up there and the Samoans and all that stuff. But, you know, like Les said, you know, for one night, the people that are there, they want to see these guys. That's what they paid for. It's the one chance that WWE can give back to the quote-unquote geeks, and not even to the geeks, but to the you know, the inner geek inside every wrestler that's there, to see their heroes and their family members and to get their shine. Let them have it. It's just been ridiculous. If they were going to cut it down as bad as they did, to me, there was no point in having it. Do it on Raw, hand out whatever it is you're going to do, and have that be it.
Rich, you still with us? Okay.
I just broke the internet. Sorry.
I was waiting to see if you had any comments. The EMLL press conference that was expected to be given to most likely, I guess, be announcing that Mystico would be heading to WWE, that was canceled. Never saw where that was rescheduled or held. What's going on with that? Do you know, Mike?
I know Brian's got the Figure Four Daily up there with Dr. Lucha Steve Sims, where the teaser for it is Mystico, Mystico, and some more Mystico talk. So obviously, you know, it's still being spun around down there. Yeah, there was no press conference. There's been no mention about it since. There was, I guess, a rumor of possibly doing a, you know, a last stand sort of tour before he goes and some other stuff like that. But I don't know. Again, if this is, I guess it's, I'm not sure how big of a deal it is, but they do have a lot to work out here that you would have figured was already worked out, although there was an issue the last time with Mystico where they really wanted him. It looked like he would come in, and he turned him down. So I don't think that's the situation here, but if for some reason I'm not surprised whatsoever that there's got to be some sort of wackiness when it comes to trying to get a Mexican wrestler up here in the States.
And I guess the other big name of people heading to WWE is kind of dying down, Sting. Is that pretty much dead in the water?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, I think there's still a possibility of it. And, again, my thing on Sting is still not sure if this is going to have legs as you continue to go on years. And I think it would just make a lot of sense, especially when, again, The Rock is back. You have the possibility of Austin because of the whole Tough Enough thing. Jericho, just because he's Jericho, you know, Nash is going to be there, and all that stuff. I still think there's a real good possibility you could see Sting pop up. I wouldn't fall over shocked. And if it doesn't happen, then realistically, I don't think it's that big of a deal, but it is kind of too bad.
Anybody surprised that we haven't heard more names confirmed or announced for the Hall of Fame at this point?
You know, I was just going to ask if you guys had heard anything that I'd missed. It seems kind of odd to me.
Yeah, we're technically, I believe, if I'm counting right, we've got about 6 weeks left. Just kind of strange because it seems like it's usually a little bit earlier than this that we're hearing more than just one person. And just kind of, you know, didn't know maybe how much that may play into what's going on with Sting. Mike, I wanted to ask you, MVP is going to be part of the New Japan Tour coming up in the States in May. I know that's up in your neck of the woods and kind of your cup of tea. You going to be heading up and seeing those shows?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to have to see at least one. It would be, I always have been a big fan of New Japan for a long, long time. And it would be wrong if I didn't go up to try to support it at least once and get a chance because they're bringing everybody. I mean, when you're bringing Hiroshi Tanahashi, who he's a name that the average fan sees in the Observer Awards and goes, who the hell is this? As far as charismatic and box office and MVP voting goes, but he is absolutely something else. And he is coming over. Shinsuke Nakamura is coming. I mean, all their big guns are actually coming over for this show. So it's, you know, they've got, I think it's Philadelphia, Newark maybe. I can't remember where one of the other shows is. But it's, you know, at least for the Philadelphia show, I'm, you know, if family or a job doesn't get in the way, I'm going to absolutely try to make it up there just because in a way it might be a once-in-a-lifetime thing because if this thing doesn't work out for them, and obviously Jersey All-Pro is their sponsor for this, but this cannot be cheap. I know those guys are probably saying, hey, I get a chance to work in the States, so the ones who have it, and it's, you know, it can be as big of a thrill to those guys as it is for a young American wrestler to go over to Japan. I mean, it's the same thing. So, you know, but it may only happen one time. You know, I can see this happening to L.A. Dragon Gate came over to L.A., and obviously they run a little bit more here now. But L.A., you know, if you're not on the West Coast or in Hawaii, odds are New Japan, if this doesn't go well, probably, you know, they may not be back. So it's worth going to at least see one time.
All right. Les, you said earlier something. I just wanted to follow up on it, clarify what you were talking about. You said something about, I guess you got a seminar coming up down here in Georgia soon?
Yeah, I don't have the details. So when I get all that, I'll, you know, but yes, it's going to be this. I'm not sure the town, the building, the whole nine yards, and I should have that within a week or so. And when I do, we'll talk about it. And, yeah, but it's going to be pretty sure the second weekend in May.
Cool. All right.
So, yeah, Richard, I'm expecting you to be there.
You know I will, and I'll let you use me as the training dummy.
Yeah. Oh.
No.
Mike, then it'll be worth your while to come down.
Yeah. So anyway, Manny Pacquiao on Capitol Hill, Mike. Sounds like he was winning over President Obama.
Do you like the Justin Bieber style haircut now on Manny Pacquiao?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he is amazing, and a big coup for CBS Sports, for Showtime. for them to land Manny Pacquiao and land the Pacquiao Mosley fight, as well as the Miguel Cotto Mayorga fight, and the possibility of a Cotto Margarito 2, which, you know, Margarito shouldn't even be boxing, but, you know, that for them to get those fights and to work out a deal with Top Rank is a big deal, and Manny Pacquiao is worth a lot of pay-per-view buys. He's one of boxing, you know, he's only one of two draws when it comes to boxing, and because of the international appeal of him, and being a congressman and being a singer and an actor and everything else, and he's basically a god in the Philippines, and is very well respected. It's a big coup, and he actually still means something. When you get a chance to meet the president, that does still kind of mean something.
You know, I think we've gone three straight weeks now with a reference to Justin Bieber. We got to stop this shit.
The Rock even brought it up too this week. He's going to be singing something, I guess, at WrestleMania.
You can't be a rock star if you still live with your parents. All right. Guys, obviously time to start wrapping it up here. I want to let everybody know that, of course, tomorrow night they can hear Peach State Pandemonium here on the GWH Radio Network. Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons. They'll be talking about the Georgia wrestling territory with a focus on the decades of the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, looking at highlights and differences between those decades tomorrow night. And, of course, as mentioned, I believe they're going to have Brad Armstrong coming up very soon on that show. Next week on our show, we're going to have Ring of Honor champion Roderick Strong with us, talk a little bit about his career, as well as get ready for the 9th anniversary Ring of Honor Internet pay-per-view, which, of course, if you haven't already done so, you can go to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and order that now. Best bargain on the Internet, best bargain in wrestling for a pay-per-view. You can't go wrong, and I know Mike's done these, and Mike will agree with that, they put on the best pay-per-views, and I haven't figured out yet why the other promotions don't do it the same way. It seems to me that they'd be saving some money, but maybe that's a technical issue I don't know enough about to say that, but it seems like it would be the most cost-effective way to do one. Cut out the middleman, right? Mike, Les, what do you guys got to plug?
Well, I'm going to Mobile for the Gulf Coast Wrestling Reunion. That's the second weekend of March. And, of course, tomorrow on PW Insider Elite with Mike Johnson on Wrestler's Eye Radio, Saturday with Doc Young and Will Strauss on Wrestling Weekly, and next Wednesday night with the greatest people in the world, Mike Sempervisi and Richard Tate, whose T-shirt I will be wearing.
All right. There you go. Fresh off the presses.
And I'll be wearing my Less Is More shirt. And very soon, at some point, you're recording another edition of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare for the Figure Four Weekly / Wrestling Observer Big Empire. And we'll also be doing Wrestling Observer Live this Sunday from 6 to 8 on the Sports Byline Radio Network alongside Brian Alvarez. So there. The only two things I have.
So there. All right, and we'll get those shirts up at this. We'll get a link to the store there tomorrow on the website, so you folks can get those T-shirts. Hold your breath on that. I want to thank Jen Holbrook. We haven't done this in a while, but we need to. Thank Jen Holbrook and Sleepy Steve for their work behind the scenes. Want to thank Nigel Sherrod and Mike Jackson for joining us this evening, and, of course, thank Les and Mike for doing great work with me alongside and trying to make me look good here. And, of course, you, the listeners, who keep tuning in each week and keep spreading the word about Ringside Rap. All right, we'll be back here next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. See you then.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.